and welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Ask the Expert session. Today's topic is exploring additional capabilities of CICS web services. My name is David Long, and this session will give you the opportunity to speak to our panel of experts on a variety of subjects related to today's topic. Moving on to slide two. In today's session, we will start off by introducing our panel of experts to you. We will then move on to give you a brief introduction to exploring technical additional capabilities of CICS web services. Next, our panel of experts will answer the five pre-submitted questions. Then we will open the lines for a live question and answer period. Finally, the session will end with a summary of today's session. Moving on to slide three. At this time, I would like our panel of experts to introduce themselves for today's call. First, we have Jonathan Lawrence. Please go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jonathan Lawrence. I'm a member of KIC's Level 3 service team. Prior to that, I worked in the Java Technology Center, and earlier still, I was a consultant working on KIC's connectivity technologies, and that was in the early 2000s. Now, in the service team, I specialize on dynamic scripting and web technologies. Thanks.
Thank you, Jonathan. Next, we have Eric Hoppe. Please go ahead, Eric.
Hello, thank you, everyone. I'm Eric Hoppe. I've been working in KIC Level 2 as a support engineer for about 5.5 years. Some of my expertise are dealing with the web service functionality, storage, and the KIC Explorer. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. And finally, we have Mark Pocock. Please go ahead, Mark.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mark Pocock. I'm also part of the KIC Level 3 service team, where I've been for the last 16 years. I focus mostly on web and Java and sockets-related technologies within KIC. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Before we get to the question and answer period, our panel would like to give you a technical overview of the topic. Moving on to slide number four, please go ahead, Eric.
Hi. Yes, today we'll be covering some various topics within the KIC web services, kind of focusing on the topics that don't necessarily get used as often as the others. We'll be starting off by talking about the differences between SSL and web service security. We'll also talk about WSAT and the functionality that it can provide. We'll talk about context switching. What does that mean, and how to tune your KIC regions to accommodate context switching within web services. We'll talk about XML only, which is a parameter you can specify on the web services assistant, and what does it do for you, and why you might want to use it. And then lastly, we'll be talking about DFH SC to LS, which is one of our web services assistants that is not as commonly used as some of the others. That'll be the main topics that we'll be covering today.
Thank you, Eric. We will now begin our question and answer session with questions that were provided by the panel. I will now hand the presentation over to our panel of experts by moving on to question number one on slide number five. Please go ahead, Mark.
Okay, so we'll start on our first question, which is looking at how SSL and web services security differ from each other and why you might wish to use one or the other or both depending on the requirements you have. So we'll move on to the answer on the next slide, which is slide six. So SSL and web services security are both means of providing additional security to your web services messages. SSL is functioning at the transport layer. So it is used to encrypt all of the data that flows across the network. And for web services, then that includes the HTTP headers, as well as the entire SOAP message. So that would be the SOAP header and the SOAP body. You can also use SSL to verify the server's identity, which occurs every time as part of the SSL handshake. And you can optionally verify the identity of the client. WS security, web services security, works at the application level, and it provides a wide range of different functions. So the simplest and probably most used function from WS security is the ability to provide a user ID under which to run the web service request in KIX. This can be done in several ways, from just a simple user ID, a user ID with a password, or you can even supply a certificate to represent that user, or if you're coming in from data power, then you could supply that information via an ICRX. WS security provides for some amount of encryption, so it allows you to encrypt the entire SOAP body or encrypt individual elements. And you can do both of these at the same time. So, for instance, you could encrypt an individual element in a message, such as a credit card number or social security number, and then you could encrypt that message fully. That does mean that the server would have to go through two levels of decryption in order to be able to read the entire message. But it can ensure that only the desired recipient process can understand the more sensitive pieces of information within the message. You can sign the message as a means of proving that it hasn't been altered since it was sent, and you can do any combination of all of those. It does require the ZOS XML toolkit in addition to KIX, and that is a free download, but that is an additional product that you would need to install for the encryption or the signing part of WS security. So if we move on to slide 7, talking more about encryption and signing, they can be very expensive in terms of GPU, so we would recommend that they are only used if required. And most of the time, SSL over the network is sufficient to protect the content of the messages. The difference between the two, so SSL and WS security in this case, would be where you felt the vulnerability was to unintended recipients being able to read part of the message. SSL would be protecting it across the network, and WS security would be protecting it in the application stack on both the client and server machines. As I said earlier, the most common use of WS security is to set the user ID, and a simple user ID plus an optional password case is optimized inside of the KIX pipeline processing and is by far the most common thing used. For server-to-server based web services, so for instance between KIX and WebSphere, then quite often you'll use WS security in combination with SSL client authentication. This sets up an asserted identity relationship where KIX and WebSphere trust each other, and that then allows all subsequent messages to just supply a username to run the request under. So that's given you a fairly high-level overview of the differences between SSL and WS security. And for the vast majority of customers, I would say that SSL protecting your data across the network plus WS security to set the user ID is the most efficient and most common one to use. So now we'll move on to question 2 on the next slide, slide 8. So we're going to look at how at implementing WSAT, which is Web Services Atomic Transactions, benefits you. So we're going to the answer on slide 9. The WSAT is Web Services Atomic Transactions. So So this allows your web service in Kix to be part of a global transaction that is potentially involving many other systems. As a provider, Kix will join a transaction that is being coordinated by an external system. And as a requester, then Kix will act as the coordinator, and the remote systems that you are contacting will join the existing Kix transaction. WSAT is supported in Kix by means of configuration and setup changes, so no changes are required to your actual application code to take advantage of WSAT. We provide a sample group, DFHWSAT, which has pipeline definitions and program definitions to handle the protocol messages that get sent back and forth. We require a new file, DFHPIDIR, and we provide JCL to create that and several definitions. And then you just need to modify your existing pipeline configuration files to include the WSAT handler program. So this program is put into both the provider and requester pipelines, and its purpose is to identify whether there are WSAT messages, WSAT headers within the message, and if so, handle them appropriately. You need to also specify a registration endpoint. So this is the location that remote systems will use to send their protocol messages into Kix. As I said earlier, there's no application changes required in order to take advantage of WSAT. Once you have configured your pipeline, then the Kix itself will handle all of the transaction processing as part of WSAT. There is one consideration, though, for your applications, is that they must not issue a sync point if they now become part of an atomic transaction. Kix is expecting the transaction, so if it's a provider, to be coordinated by the remote system. And as such, Kix cannot be taking sync points, as you may end up out of step with the overall result of the transaction. So you could end up with Kix committing, even though the overall decision for the transaction is to roll back. So the expectation is that your application would finish normally, but if there was a need to roll back or back out, then that would be signaled to the coordinator by means of a SOAP fault indicating that the request to Kix had failed, or an architected application response that maybe included a bad return code or some other means of indicating that the request had actually failed. So we'll continue on to slide 10. So the first thing to consider here is that if you don't need to use WSAT, then you shouldn't use it. So WSAT does have an overhead. So all this extra processing, whilst Kix is doing it for you, and it's largely invisible to the application, there is a lot of work going on behind the scenes. There are several extra network flows for all the protocol messages. So there will be a registration message sent to the coordinator, a registration response message that will come back to indicate that that registration was successful or not. Then there'll be prepare messages, commit messages, and their responses as well. Inside Kix, there'll be extra tasks running in order to process these messages. The application task itself becomes long-running, and you'll get an enforced pipeline context switch. And additionally, you're going to get two tasks for every inbound protocol message. So your pipeline application task will automatically be run as two tasks, and you'll get an additional six tasks for all the protocol messages. So in total, to run a straightforward Kix provider web service that is part of an atomic transaction, you'll have nine actual Kix tasks to do that work. If Kix is the provider, then WSAT will typically be imposed upon you because it is the requester that's deciding whether this web service call needs to be part of its current transaction or not. If the requester is having to run and issue web services calls transactionally, then you will have probably little choice but to configure Kix to support WSAT. If Kix is the requester, then you need to decide if the web service that you are calling needs to be invoked transactionally or not. If you have a simple, well-defined application with an architected COM area containing good responses to indicate failure, then you may not need to use WSAT if you can guarantee that both the provider and the requester sides will come to the same decision. So that may be a bit more difficult to think about whether WSAT is needed or not. But certainly if you're not in control of the remote web service you are calling, then you may not be able to make that decision, in which case you would need WSAT to ensure transactionality. That's all for question two, so we'll move on to the next question on slide 11.
Thanks, Mark. So question three is, as Mark already kind of mentioned, with WSAT, is there could be context switching that takes place with web services. So what is context switching, and how do I exploit it or tune for it? And so the answer will be on slide 12. So context switching, by default, when a web service request comes into Kix or out, you know, the pipeline request will run a single CPIH task using the default user ID. And in most cases, one or both of these are going to change or need to change, and that's when a context switch will happen. And this can happen, you know, two different ways. You can have it done statically or dynamically. If you're going to do it statically, this would be done by using the transaction and user ID attributes on the URI map. And these would get specified if you're using the web services assistant when you run, you know, WS to LS. And so when you specify them on the job to run WS to LS, when that job completes, the new transaction or the new user ID that you want the web service to run under will be placed in the WS bind file. And so when the web service runs, it'll read the WS bind file and then know what transaction ID to use and what user ID to use. You can also change it dynamically, and this can be done by using a pipeline handler. So when the web service, when the pipeline handler gets driven, your handler program can set the train ID and the user ID by specifying values in the DFHWS dash train ID container and the DFHWS user ID container. And when you do it dynamically, it's usually would be due to information on the in the request itself. So again, you'll have a context switch, and the new task is used to run the app handler. Going on to slide 13. So when a new transaction runs under new train ID, the two tasks are still going to be connected to each other using request streams. So what you'll see if you have like a monitor or you do an inquire task, you'll see that the original pipeline task will stay in the system while the new transaction runs until completion. The first transaction will be placed in the RZCBNOTI wait. So this can be important when you come for tuning, because you don't want to ever block the second task from completing, from being able to run. Otherwise, you'll have a bunch of transactions suspended in the RZCBNOTI wait. So this is where you might want to use T-class. You only want to T-class the original pipeline task. That way it can, and then you don't T-class the secondary transaction, allowing it to always run. You want to make sure that your max task is at least twice the value of the T-class limit, because you will be needing two transactions per web service request. And then you also want to make sure that the new context switch takes place uses a different train ID. That way, because if they use the same train ID, then you won't be able to T-class just the first one. You'd be affecting both of them as well. So you'd want to use a different train ID. That kind of explains considerations when you want to, when using context switching. So if you go on to slide 14, so this is going to be how would you make use of XML only? What is XML only used for? The answer is on slide 15. Now, there may be times when you do not want Kix to transform the XML into the SOAP message into the application data. And if you want this, Kix will achieve this by making use of the XML-only function that you can specify with DFHWS to LS. What this does is, it's only available with a runtime level 2.1 or higher, and it was provided by the APAR 59794 or PTF UK 34648. And what it does is, when you specify XML only equals yes, the generated WS bind file will still allow Kix to maintain the web service in the sense of, like, through the pipeline interface. So when you do a pipeline scan, we would still build a web service in the URI map definition. But when the web service at runtime, when the web service request comes into Kix, rather than Kix mapping the XML into a COBOL structure, for example, the application will have to work with the XML directly that is in the DFHWS body container. So that way you have more control, more flexibility of what you want to do with that data, rather than relying on Kix to do the mapping for you. So by using this option on WSLS, it would still allow you to get the benefit of the pipeline scan functionality, but not having to be required to have Kix do the mapping of the XML in the application data area. And that we'll be going on to question 5 on slide 16.
Thank you, Eric. Question 5 on slide 16. Why would I want to use DFHSC2LS? So I'll just mention, first of all, this is a catalog procedure which forms part of the Kix Web Services Assistant introduced in Kix DS version 4.1. So if we could move on to the answer on page slide 17, please. So the answer is that you can use or would use DFHSC2LS to help you create a Kix program that can parse or create XML. And the way it does this is by converting the SC of DFHSC2LS, stands for schema. So you use this to convert an XML schema or WSDL document containing the equivalent of a schema to a high-level language data structure. In fact, it generates data structures for all the supported languages which have data structures, and at the same time an XML binding. And then the newish ExecKix Transform API takes as input the XML binding and the XML schema and uses that as metadata to convert XML conforming to the schema into the applicable language data structure. The Kix Web Assistant has two utilities. It's got the SC to LS. It's also got LS to SC. And this is the complementary generator, which will produce an XML schema and a binding file from a high-level language data structure, so it's sort of bidirectional conversion between schemas and high-level language structures. So in each case, the ExecKix Transform API uses the generated binding file and the schema in order to control the conversion, whichever way you're converting. So the Transform API can transform from high-level language to XML and from XML to the high-level language. In each case, it uses the schema and the binding file in order to give it the information it needs to perform those conversions. So if we could move on to the second part of the answer, which is on page 18. I've actually pretty well covered all of this on the previous slide. Just to reiterate that the XML assistant has the two utility programs, LS to SC and LS to W. That's actually the wrong way around. It should be SC to LS and LS to SC. There's a slight there's a typo on that slide, which I apologize. The utility programs support mapping between high-level data structure and the schema definitions, and those are effectively the metadata which describes the actual data which is being converted. So where then, there's also, when you perform the conversion, there is a parameter on the, when you run the catalog procedure, you can ensure that the convert, you can generate mappings for earlier releases of KIX. And just to summarize on the KIX Transform API, that supports conversion between XML and the high-level language data structures with XML transform data. There is also a mechanism to query raw XML. So if you don't have to necessarily convert XML to a high-level language, you can use the Transform API to drill down into raw XML and pull out specific elements or specific parts of the XML. And the Transform API uses the KIX channel and container interfaces for its input and output. That's probably the last thing to mention. So without that, concludes the answer to why would you want to use DFHSC2LS. And so I'll hand back now to take questions from the wider audience. Thank you.
I'd like to thank our panel of experts for answering the pre-submitted questions. At this time, we would like to open the lines for a live question and answer period.
At this time, I'm showing no questions over the phone.
Thank you. We do have one question in the group chat that perhaps should be addressed on the phone, and that question is, what is a request?
Okay, this is Mark here. I answered the question in the chat, but I can talk a bit about it anyway. So it was mentioned by Eric in the answer about a context switch, that this context switch is managed by use of a request stream. So request streams have been in KIX since version 2. They were originally introduced for EJB support, and they are a mechanism for joining together, well, initially two tasks, but they allow KIX to have a target task that is essentially long-lived and a number of source tasks that can communicate and pass data in a coordinated fashion. These tasks can be local in the same region, or they can be connected across MRO. The other advantage request streams have is that they have a public ID. This public ID is unique to the particular task, the target task that is, in the region that it's running in. And so that means it can be provided to remote systems to be returned back to KIX maybe as part of another request. And whichever KIC system happens to receive that request can make use of the public ID and find its way back to the waiting target task. So it's used in the pipeline quite a lot for WSAT. So when KIC registers its interest in a transaction with a remote coordinator, one of the pieces of information that KIC supplies is that request stream public ID. When the remote coordinator sends a later protocol message, for example, the prepare message at sync point time, then it doesn't matter which KIC region actually receives that prepare message, because it will use the public ID and be able to identify the target region and the target task within that region that is waiting for that prepare message. So I think that's pretty much covered, you know, what request streams are, for the most part, from the application point of view, hidden internally in KIC. The only time you're aware that they are there is when you will see tasks suspended in weights that are beginning with RZ, and then you know they are suspended for something related to request streams.
Okay, thank you. A related question was just posted regarding request streams. Can a request stream be used directly by user transaction via the exact KIC API, for example?
No.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And then another question that came into the group chat. Is the processing done by ExecKIC Transform eligible for ZIIP processing?
Yeah. This is Jonathan Lawrence here. I'll answer this. I believe it will be, because the ExecKIC, the processing which is performed by ExecKIC Transform does actually run within a JVM in KIC, and therefore that processing should be eligible for ZIIP processing. That's the short answer.
Okay, thank you. And then another question in the group chat. For WSAT, what were the 9 tasks?
Okay, so for WSAT, the 9 tasks were the CWXN task for the original request, the initial pipeline task, and the long-lived context switch task. So those were the 3 tasks to run the actual business request. Then in addition to that, you would have had a CWXN task and a pipeline task for the registration response, the prepare message, and the commit message. So you end up with 3 CWXN messages, 4 CWXN tasks, 4 initial pipeline tasks, and 1 long-lived pipeline task, which has actually run the business logic.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to thank everyone for participating in this Q&A. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject WSTE Subscribe. Also, if there is a topic you would like to see scheduled, or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please feel free to let us know as well. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, I would like to advance to slide number 21 and pass the presentation over to Eric for a summary of today's presentation.
Thanks again for everyone for joining us today. To summarize what we talked about, we looked at different functions within KIC Web Services that may not be used as common as others, and kind of explain their use. For example, we talked about SSL versus WS Security. We talked about WSAT, the web service atomic transactions. We talked about context switching and tuning considerations to help prevent long waits. We talked about the XML-only parameter for DFHWS to LS, and we also talked about the DFHSC to LS and how that can benefit you. And that's all.
Thank you, Eric, for the great summary. At this time, we will conclude the Ask the Expert session. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation and hope for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's session will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and a sincere thank you to our panel of experts for presenting today.
Thank you for participating on today's conference. The conference is now concluded. You may disconnect at this time.